Welcome to Sports Rivals with Monty and Ernie. Lively, entertaining banter on sports topics you want to hear.
All right, everyone, wherever you are and however you may be listening, welcome to the day after Mother's Day edition of the Sports Rivals. That's Ernie, I'm Monty, and together we are going to cover the world of sports. This show dominated by the NBA. Of course, we're going to break down the second round of the NBA playoffs. We're going to talk a little bit NBA draft lottery, where the Hawks overcome the odds to get the first pick. We'll talk a little bit about the awards that have happened in the NBA, led by the Joker's MVP. And of course, we have to talk a little bit about Austin Rivers' controversial comments about the NBA and the NFL. But Ernie, first, let's start with your Boston Celtics, who are getting another free pass in round two, although they did lose one, as you predicted.
Yeah, I mean, this is doing the Boston Celtics no favor whatsoever. I mean, I hate to say it, it comes down to coaching. When you fail to, you know, blow out teams that you should blow out, and let's be honest, in round one, you're without Jimmy Butler, you know, and you let them sneak a win in there in that game, and in this series, Jarrett Allen is out, and today Jarrett Allen and Donovan Mitchell were out, and you know it was a nail biter until the end. I mean, this pokes a lot of holes in, at least I think, the national media in the Boston Celtics' ability to obtain a championship that really is paved for them to get to there. But I knew this going into the playoffs, because this is 3 years already. 3 years that they play this way. When Boston Celtics play good teams, they play well. When they play undermanned teams, they play down to the competition. I mean, it's lived up to them. And in next round, it's not going to do them any favors also, because if the Knicks go through, they're already hurt. And the Indiana Pacers are just, they're the worst team remaining of the, you know, of the eight that are in the playoffs right now. So, you know, my worry right now is that this path that they're taking, and I still do believe that they're going to make the NBA Finals, will not prepare them for the NBA Finals, whoever they meet.
Yeah, I would agree with that. You know, I think it's not that they're just taking it easy, but I think that's the perception. And I think what you said earlier from a national perspective, I don't know if there's that many people paying attention, because I think most people are like me, they just assume that they're going to roll into the finals. So one hiccup, which is what they've had now in two consecutive series, but the path just gets easier and easier and easier for them. But that's a good point that you made. Can they just turn it on in the finals when they're going to play a highly competitive team, no matter who it is? Any of the four teams can give them a challenge or propose an issue. What's just mind-boggling to me is how they're losing at home. How they're 500 at home in the playoffs over the last 3 years.
Oh, yeah.
That's a pretty big sample size now. And yet they go on the road and their focus is that much better and they win.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, like I said, when there's adversity, they play up. They did a stat today during the game, and I think they have the fifth best record, road record, in the NBA over like a 20 game period.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Because they win, I think they win like 2/3 of their games on the road. But yep. Yeah, like you said, 500 at home. But what's perplexing about this is that Jason Tatum is shooting 25% from three, under 50% from his field goal percentage. His rebounding has gone up. His defensive play is still decent, but from, like, everybody likes offense, the points is down. Jaylen Brown has clearly outplayed him from the start of the playoff, round one and now round two. And you know, only over the last two games, including today, that he became the leading scorer. So I'm hoping that
he's pacing himself.
Yeah, that kind of turns the tide and whatnot. On the other side, Kristaps Porzingis, who's still recovering from his calf injury, I thought was going to be not a problem with Al Horford, you know, replacing him. Al Horford right now, over the last two games, 0-for-10 from the 3-point line.
Well, he's been asked to do more than he's been asked to do all
still,
year.
Still, what's perplexing about it is these are wide open threes. Cleveland is daring him to take threes. So there isn't a defender. His four shots today, no one within 10 feet of him. He goes 0-for-4. I mean, they're still rolling. Yeah,
and they're still rolling. So they're going to put them out in Game 5.
Yeah, they will.
Like they did the Miami Heat, and then they're going to sit around and wait. So in that Knicks Pacers series, I think the Knicks magic is starting to run out. If OJ Anunoby cannot come back, and he's the key. I mean, Jalen Brunson is remarkable, and we're going to talk a little bit more about the MVP. But they are 26-5 when OJ Anunoby plays, yeah. And they're 30-31 yeah. when he's out. That tells me that they need him, and because he's a glue kind of guy. And without him, they were they almost won the game 3. Mm-hmm. That was tight. They got destroyed in the last game, and I think Josh Hart is coming back to the meet. Those Villanova 3, all of their starters are playing obscene amounts of minutes. Josh. I look for Indiana to go into New York tomorrow and knock off the Knicks and then come home and finish them off. So I do think it's going to be, unless Anunoby comes back, I do think it's going to be the Pacers and the Celtics. And I know you were a little bit worried about the Pacers in the beginning. But yeah, I mean, they have some pieces, but I think that might bring out the best in your Celtics.
It could be. I mean, Boston Celtics beat them by 50, and then they lose two games to them. Yeah. So that exactly what I've been saying all year. They have the ability to crush these teams, and which they have. Today was the first game that they haven't won by more than 20 points.
Yeah, they didn't cover the spread today.
All their wins have been 20. Or actually, I'm sorry, Miami. They beat one time Miami by like 14 or something. But most of their wins have been won by 20 points. I mean, it wasn't close. Today was the first double-digit win. I mean, yeah. Single-digit win that they had in the whole postseason. So,
see, the Pacers, I find them fun because they're a high-paced team. They're even putting up 120 on the Knicks.
Yeah.
But what I don't think, I think the Knicks would prepare Boston better for the finals than the Pacers.
Me too.
Because they're going to face a dog defensive team, no matter who it is. Because even the Mavericks are so much better at defense now than they were before. And the Pacers are up and down, and there's really nobody that plays that style that's left in the West. So I think the drag-out, knockdown, physical play of the Knicks will probably better suit the Celtics to prepare them for the finals. But let's switch over to the West, where, wow, what a tale of 2 weeks. We talked about this last week after Minnesota won Game 1, that if they lost Game 2, Denver, it was over. They get smoked in Game 2. They were having a mental breakdown led by Jamal Murray.
Yep.
But the whole team was frustrated. You just thought, wow, they're going to go back to Minnesota. They might get swept. And lo and behold, Denver flips the script, wins by 26 in Game 3, holds on yesterday, led by double digits for most of the game, ended up winning by, 6 or 8 points?
Yeah.
It's back to 2-2, heading back to Denver tomorrow. What do you see? I mean, what do you like in this series?
To me, I hate to say it, I think the refs are dictating the series. In games 1 and 2, the refs were letting them play. In games 3 and 4, the whistle was tight. And you saw how that affected the Minnesota defense. They couldn't attack like they were in the first two games. And it threw them off on their offensive game. So here comes the balance. Where does it end in the last three games? You know, right now it's been two extremes. Let them play ball or call the tight whistle. So if they call the tight whistle, advantage Denver. They let him play ball. I want to see it somewhere in between. I really thought that I was really – I've never been so entertained by a defensive output like Minnesota did in game two without Gobert. That was incredible.
It was incredible, but it was very physical.
Exactly,
but. I mean, it was slapping and bodying up, and it was very physical. So if you're getting away with that, you're right. But that you said something that was very important there. I think Minnesota's better without Rudy Gobert. Look at how their defense was incredible, and he's the defensive player of the year. But that game, their defense was incredible. But their offense flows better
without him. Yeah, I agree.
Cat plays better when he's not there for whatever reason. I mean, he'll get his follow-up dunks and things along those lines. But that game, too, was an extremely – defense aside, they played really well. They were spreading the floor. Everybody was getting spacing. Naz Reid was hitting threes. Alexander came off the bench for threes. McDaniel was hitting threes. I just thought their offense was much more in a flow. They were really Ant-Man dependent in game three and especially game four. He tried to single-handedly keep them in the game. 44 points, but it fell short. But I mean, I'm not saying you got to bench Rudy Gobert, but I did think that sometimes it's matchups and having two big guys, I'm not sure, is suiting Minnesota in this particular series.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, game one was, you know, Gobert was president at that time, but I think the surprise is over. Denver had that chance to look at the tape and make their adjustments
and
on
Denver
that.
Denver was just flat out flat in the first two games.
Exactly. So again, it comes down to, I mean, and I hate to say, I hate the refs to be a part of this, but as long as it's consistent, if you're going to make sure you call the tight whistle on both sides. You let them play on both sides. Like today's game, I mean, Jason Tatum, it was kind of a rough game in my opinion. You know, Jason Tatum definitely got fouled a lot, and he got a technical, and I thought he was going to be thrown out of the game, actually, which would have been stupid. But I thought that the officiating was even on both sides.
Well, and that's the important part. I mean, if you feel like it's a... But again, this is the same referee crew that referees the whole series, so it should be consistent. I mean, I can't imagine why there's such a varying degree unless the league is saying, hey, you got to pull back a little bit. They lost their mind in game two. But it's a great series. I mean, this is a great series. And you're right. I mean, I'd be shocked now if this doesn't go seven. But the winner of this, the survivor of this, is going to be a little tired in the next round.
Yeah, they definitely. And with the way that Dallas is playing right now, what are they
up? Dallas
is
up 86-82 at 5 minutes left in the fourth quarter. So if Dallas holds on, they take a commanding 3-1 lead.
Yeah, which I would expect. I mean, OKC has a lot of talent. This is not their time. But to get back to the Denver series, to me, the key in that series is going to be how do you hold Gordon and how do you hold Porter Jr.? Today, Gordon was 11 out of 12.
Yeah, Gordon was obscene yesterday. But Porter hasn't gone off like he did against the Lakers. They're doing a great job on not letting him get clean looks at his shot.
Yeah.
They're giving it to Gordon and he beat him.
Yeah.
But he's kind of inconsistent. So generally speaking, Gordon doesn't put together two consecutive games like that.
Well, for Minnesota's sake, hopefully that happens for their fans. Because to me, that's all they need to do. They can keep Murray in check.
They have.
Yeah, they're good enough to win with Joker scoring 30 and doing all the Joker things that he does, which is evident in games one and two, keeping Murray limited. To me, what destroys that team is a bit of their own offensive play, and on the defensive side, getting one of the others, being it again Aaron Gordon or Michael Porter Jr., to make up for Murray's lack of offense. So
yeah, you know. And on the Minnesota side, Ant needs help. I mean, Karl-Anthony Towns was good in game two, but really struggled yesterday, going 1-for-10 in the first half. He really struggled. And it's going to come down to that, because I think at this point, Joker's going to get Jokers and Ant's going to get Ants. it's the other players. You know, who's going to get the better supporting cast? And in games 3 and 4, it was Denver. In games 1 and 2, it was Ant.
It's a
three-game series now.
Yeah, it's the best of three, and I don't know if home court advantage is home court advantage, to tell you the truth. I mean, I think either team can easily win at either team's venue.
Well, they've already proven that, so that's interesting. And now the Mavericks is 86-84. The Thunder really need to get this win to stay in the fight here. But I do think Dallas is going to win this. Dallas is playing tremendous, but as long as Luka's this banged up, I think they're going to have a very difficult time beating either of the Timberwolves or the Nuggets, because he's a 70% of the regular Luka, but the rest of the team, PJ Washington has been lights out.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and Kyrie Irving has complimented Luka's whatever you lack of. During this particular season. And I'm not really sure if it's more what Dallas has to do rather than what the Thunder just doesn't have. I really think in my heart of hearts that Chet is a power forward. He is not a center. I think they got to do something with this roster. I really don't. I'd find it very difficult to see them going to the finals, let alone winning it. And in my opinion, Lu Dort, being a forward, although I like Lu Dort, I love his energy out there. The guy's a 6'4 forward. In the playoff, that might work during the regular season, but in the playoffs, that is a detriment, to you defensively. And, he can get hot, from the 3-point line and whatnot, but I think they need to make a trade during the offseason if this does not pull through. Trade out Lu Dort, get a quality big man in there, move Chet to the forward position, and then that becomes, I believe, a very scary team. But right now, I think they've lasted longer than better than I thought. I mean, the first round series against New Orleans Pelicans, really not a test in any form or fashion, because Zion was absent during that season, which to me really makes them. I mean, without Zion, they're not even. In the play-in tournament, in my opinion. I mean, Zion miraculously played over 60 games this particular season, only to be hurt, in the final moments of that play-in tournament. And OKC, cruised past them. But, against the Dallas Mavericks, and like you said, with Luka, not at 100%, they're giving them a battle. And as we see right now, they've taken the lead over the Mavericks.
They have behind SGA's 32 points. Chet Holmgren just hits a three. It's now 89-86 with 3 minutes left. The Mavericks being led again by PJ Washington's 20 points. Kyrie not even in double digits right now with just 9 points on 4 of 11 shooting. Luka's only 6 for 19 for 17 points. So it looks like this game will come down to the wire. So again, that's Ernie. I'm Monty. Together we are talking a lot of NBA. And Ernie, all the awards have now been given out. The Joker wins his third in 4 years. Minnesota cleans house on all the other awards. Defensive Player of the Year, Sixth Man of the Year, Teammate of the Year. They won 4 individual awards. And I think you can see that love and chemistry that's leading. You need that if you're going to be a defensive team like they are. It's trust. It's effort. It's commitment to each other to play defense like that. Your thoughts on the awards?
Yeah, I mean, it's... To me, awards are awards. If with those 3 awards that you just mentioned, I mean, to me, that all comes up to coaching. Fitch came. I'm not sure what Fitch came in. Did he come in second or third?
I don't even know. I just know that the OKC guy won.
Yeah,
I think Orlando's coach came in second, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay, but
let me pull it up while you talk here.
But anyways, Fitch, in my opinion, I thought should have won that award. But again, the Coach of the Year award really is dubious, because you win that award, you tend to get fired within the next 3 years after that. Mike Brown, who's won it twice, he got fired. What's that guy? Nick Nurse from Toronto gets fired. His predecessor before that in Toronto 2 years prior to that, he gets fired. Just a number of coaches. And who I believe is the best coach currently in the NBA, right now in Miami, is Spoelstra, has never won that award. So out of all the awards, that Coach of the Year award means the least, in my opinion. But Joker, you know, deserving, in my opinion, of the MVP this year. You know, from a statistical standpoint and from a, you know, deep analytical, I mean, I don't think there's anyone close. Embiid, who I believe, if he stayed healthy, would have challenged him. But that's not the case right now. And in my opinion, this 65-game limitation on these awards really didn't hurt them this year. But it's going to hurt them in the future. You know, that 65 is pretty difficult to obtain. I went back and I saw some statistics on, you know, all these postseason awards. And I believe in the last 20 years, 14 award winners would not have won it if they kept with that 65-game rule. Giannis being the most recent, he wouldn't have won the MVP nor the Defensive Player of the Year awards. The year he won it, he only played 63 games in the you know, in the 2019-2020 season. You know, there's a year where Kobe Bryant only played 58 games, you know, and he won an MVP. Karl Malone, from what I remember, both of his years where he won MVP, he didn't hit the statistic, nor did Shaquille O'Neal. So a lot. In fact, Joel Embiid, throughout his illustrious career, would have only been qualified for the postseason awards twice. Kawhi Leonard, in his long tenure, would have only qualified for postseason awards four times. And with that award being tied into contract incentives, that is huge.
Yeah, but show up and play. I'm all for it. So the most valuable player, it was Joker 1, SGA 2, Luka 3, Giannis 4, Brunson 5, Tatum 6, Ant 7. Rookie of the Year, Victor Wembanyama, was unanimous. He had one of the greatest rookie seasons in recent memory. Chet was 2. Brandon Miller was 3. You know what? Brandon Miller did a little bit better than I thought, but their team sucks. Yeah. So it's easier to do that. Defensive Player of the Year, this is where it was a ripoff, because Anthony Davis should have won the Player of the Year.
Well,
he came in 4th behind Rudy Gobert, Victor Wembanyama, and Bam Adebayo. We'll see who starts for the U.S. Olympic team there. And then the Sixth Man of the Year, Naz Reid over Malik Monk and Bobby Portis. Wow. Naz Reid. That guy kills the Lakers. He's so much better than I thought.
I like Naz.
Most Improved Player, Tyrese Maxey, who definitely earned that. Kobe White and Sengun was 3rd.
Yeah, Kobe had a terrific
year. Yeah, he really... I thought he was going to be a bust, but he's kind of bounced back.
Hey,
and the clutch player
North
of the year was Steph Curry, followed by DeMar DeRozan and SGA.
And your man didn't qualify because he didn't make 65, Jamal Murray.
Yeah, he didn't qualify.
Yeah, he didn't qualify
for that. So that's the awards. Really no surprises to me. I mean, I joke about Anthony Davis, but I think it was a foregone conclusion that Rudy Gobert is going to win. And that's his third or fourth defensive player of the year. He's in the Dikembe Mutombo range now.
Oh, Gobert.
Rudy Gobert.
I believe it's 4.
Yeah, and it's...
So he's tied with, like, Ben Wallace.
Yeah, and Dikembe Mutombo, I think, as the ones that have had the most awards. So that is the end of it in terms of that. But like the Joker said, he had the most fun the one year in the last 4 where he did not win the MVP.
Oh, yeah,
because that came with an NBA championship.
Yeah.
So, again, the second round is still very much in play. Let's give you one more update. It's 96-94 with 33 seconds left with the Thunder and the Mavericks trying to even this up at 2. Denver and Minnesota is 2-2. Knicks and Indiana is 2-2. Mavs and OKC could be 2-2. And Boston is just cruising up 3-1.
I don't know about
cruising. Getting ready to knock them off in the 5th game. So, Ernie, the lottery was also this week. And in what is proving to be...
A shot in the dark.
boring NBA draft in recent memory. There is absolute. Let's take a look at the last 5 years. You had Zion. You had Ant-Man. You had Paolo Banchero. You had Victor Wembanyama. And now you can't name any of the people in the top.
Sar,
because it's so easy to pronounce. But it's this is like the worst year to have the number one pick compared to last year.
Yeah.
But the Hawks defy the odds. They go from the second smallest chance all the way up to number one. So they hold the cards there. They have the number one pick.
Yeah, and that was Toronto's pick. Imagine how Masai Ujiri must be feeling right now. Oh, my goodness. Yeah,
exactly. So now does this change the Hawks offseason? Because they were going to unload Trae Young or some of the other ones, but now they get the number one pick. The thing is, based on the talent that's available, I don't see anyone there that changes your long-term philosophy.
No.
So if you're going to jettison Trae Young or DeJounte Murray, I don't think having this particular number one pick changes that plan, because I don't see a real difference maker, at least in the short run, on any of these teams.
Yeah, I would actually trade this pick, to tell you the truth. Get some feelers out there to see who you can do business with and get some kind of proven talent out there, in my opinion, because that's what they really need right now. The contracts on both of those guys in regards to Young and DeJounte Murray are running out, and they don't have 2 or 3 years to develop this, whoever they pick in this year's draft. The time is now, and I believe, in my opinion, that jobs will be lost from now until then, when this pick becomes a fruitful contributor to the Hawks. That it would be in their best interest to get some proven talent right now.
Yeah, I mean, so you look at the top of the draft. You mentioned Sar from France at one. The Wizards have the 2 pick, and they're projected to take a Zachary Risacher, also from France, and have no idea who this is. But all I know is this guy is going to slot in real nicely next to next year's MVP, Jordan Poole.
Oh my God. The meme.
And then the Rockets at 3rd get Reed Shepherd, who is wowing them at the NBA camp with his 42-inch vertical and brilliant shooting. If the Rockets were to add somebody like him on top of Green and Van Fleet and Sengun, and man, they're starting to accumulate. But it's the Spurs that are really intriguing with 2 of the top 8 picks. They need a point guard. So getting a Rob Dillingham from Kentucky there would be a really good selection. Super fast, athletic, can push the pace, which I think is good for Wemby. The Pistons, they get no luck in this draft.
They had the worst record.
They're scheduled to take Matas Buzelis, who played in the G League this year. Charlotte, Donovan Klingon. So the Connecticut guy drops to the 6th pick. Some people had him possibly at 1 or no lower than 3. But I think by fit, I think dropping to the Hornets, poor thing for him. And then the Blazers with a Nikola Topic, don't know who that is. And then the Spurs at 8, projected to take a Dalton Knecht. I think he would be a great fit with Wemby as well. Wemby can play inside, outside, but he's such a difference maker defensively that Knecht is not a great defender, but a great offensive player. And Wemby needs scorers around them as well.
Yeah, he needs spacing.
So if they could get a Dillingham and a Knecht and you put them around, that'd be great. Memphis, Stephen Castle. Does that mean they're moving on from John Moran already? That they're going to get another point guard? Utah, Ron Holland from the G League. And then let's just go down to the Lakers, because that's really all that matters. Zach Edey at 15 to the Heat.
Oh, I would love for them to get Zach Edey. He's not going to do well.
And Duke's Jared McCain to the Lakers at 17. Although the Lakers are supposedly efforting to trade this pick to get another proven superstar.
Yeah. Again, that's the LeBron James way to go. I mean, it's now or never.
Yeah, that's always how it is. So, you know how the football draft, we were super excited. Last year we did a an NBA mock draft. I don't even believe we can do one. I don't even know these people. We'll just be guessing. We'll have a comical one. We'll do like a Tom Brady's roast version of the NBA with Nikki Glaser.
I believe the talent is, I don't think the top end talent, like you mentioned, is there. But I think this draft, you know, you could find some gems. You know, like several years ago when Sengun went 15. I remember that pick because that was Boston Celtics pick. And look at him now.
Speaking of the Celtics, they're taking Juan Nunez from Rada Pharma, a point guard.
I doubt it. I doubt it.
Anyways, so that just gives you a rundown. The Atlanta Hawks defy the odds, get to number one. However, we'll see if that really matters or if they're going to want to look to package this pick and move on. But Ernie, what I really wanted to talk about, because I found it fascinating and it caused so much anger amongst sports personalities, especially football players, but Austin Rivers was asked a question in regards to NBA players' athleticism, and he said that he can get 30 NBA players that could play in the NFL right now, and you couldn't get 30 NFL players to play in the NBA right now. So without taking sides, I want your opinion on what he said.
I think that could be true. And to tell you the truth, the only reason why I say that is because you can't find 30 NFL players that can play in the NBA. I truthfully don't think so. But I think if you get the training regimen down, you can find some NBA players that can bulk up, become terrific tight ends, become terrific tackles, become, you know.
Yeah, see, and that's where I agree. I think the NFL players got so offended that you can't take like a – well, first of all, they started calling all the NBA players soft because they're always whining and bitching and complaining and injured. And there's some truth to that. But the reality is what Austin Rivers was talking about is having the athleticism to compete at the NFL level.
Imagine.
So if you took a Ant-Man or a LeBron and you put him in an end. See, here's the thing. This is what I was yelling at the TV when Shannon and Stephen A. and Kendrick Perkins are going at it today when they're getting so mad. They're like, there's no way these NBA players could do it. The person that you would ask would be NFL GMs. So, Ant-Man says, I want to play in the NFL next year. Will a GM draft him?
Oh, definitely.
Hell yeah, they're going to draft him with his hops, his speed, his strength.
Tyrese Maxey, De'Aaron Fox, terrific DBs or wide receivers or safeties.
Yeah, you don't have to be a bulked up physical player. You can be, like you said, some DBs or wide receivers or tight ends. I'm not saying that they're better athletes, but they're different kinds of athletes. Imagine. And it's different for an NFL player to step on to the court. Some can, I'm sure. Like Michael Parsons in those games or Myles Garrett. I mean, if you ask them to just rebound, be physical, not have to do anything else, maybe they can compete for a little bit. Yeah. But I think there are a number of players that an NFL GM would take a flyer on Zion. Because of their sheer athleticism.
Yeah. I mean, let's look at the college players who transition into the NFL. I mean, we have Hall of Famers that that?
Tony Gonzalez from Cal, Jason Kidd's teammate, became an NFL Hall of Famer. Yeah. As is the Chargers tight end as well was at Ball State University. Gosh, what is his name? He's number 86. He had all the records before Travis Kelce just beat it.
No, I'm thinking about the North.
Oh, the defensive lineman.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, number 90. I'm drawing a blank on him too.
Me too.
But he's also a Hall of Famer.
He's a Hall of Famer. So there has been proof positive. I mean, it's tested, or it's, you know, for all those names that you mentioned already, those guys are in the Hall of Fame in a sport and they played both sports, you know. So I mean, I don't see why he's getting all that heat. I mean, it's a legitimate topic in my opinion. I think just the NFL players.
Julius Peppers. I just think that you take so much pride in your own individual sport that when a basketball player says that, you take it as a personal slap because you know how hard it is, how much work it takes, how much you throw your body on the line. And I do think football players look at basketball players as... They could be fun to watch. They could be ultra athletic, but they view them as soft. And that's something that basketball players call on themselves with the load management and sitting out and all these kinds of things that they whine about.
Charlie Ward was a Heisman. What is he famous? What did he get paid for?
Yeah, and he's another one that played in the NBA as well. That can do both. So I was fascinated by how much traction it got, and then when it gets heated, I just thought to myself, you know what, the NBA and NFL general managers would be the one to make this, but I can guarantee, maybe not now at 39, but a 28-year-old LeBron James would have gone in the top 2 to 3 rounds of an NFL draft.
He'd go in the first round.
Because of just his size, his strength, his speed, his dexterity.
You seen that guy at 18? At 18, that guy was already built. There's no way that an off-season workout program, that guy could have been, he could have played whatever, you know, specialty position you wanted him to play.
And Zion would happily gain another 50 pounds and play left tackle for the New Orleans Saints instead. That was 6'5", 6'6".
You know, I see...
With his feet?
I see Zion as an edge.
Or rushing the pass?
Yeah, I see that guy as an edge. I mean...
With his quick feet, maybe a defensive tackle, getting up at 6'5", 6'6". So, I mean, what do you guys think? Because I do think it's a fascinating thing to say. Are you NFL backers that heck with the NBA? Are you people that are open-minded enough to say, hey, maybe? Sports Rivals Podcast on IG and Facebook, Sports Rivals Pod on Twitter. But Austin Rivers really... He's more famous for this comment than he was in 10 years of the NBA. I mean, he got heat from NFL players. Yeah. Shannon Sharpe was fired up today when I was at the Y working out, just listening to them. I was like, wow, it's fascinating. Kendrick Perkins. So it became where NFL players were so offended that they came back so hot that Kendrick Perkins was like, now you're offending us. Now you're saying we're all soft. I ain't soft. I grew up in the same place as Marcus Spears. I grew up in the same projects as Ryan Clark. I ain't softer than them. And then that became this testosterone battle. I was finding it fascinating, but I'm curious to see what you guys think. You guys agree with Austin Rivers? You guys agree with Ryan Clark and Shannon Sharpe and the rest of the NFL players? Or are you neutral and somewhere in between? But either way, it was a fascinating discussion. So, speaking of fascinating, I'm curious to see where Ernie is going with his closing thought.
Yeah, almost on the same thread, but, you know, it's controversial in the fact that, you know, one of basketball's all-time greats is being compared to by his contemporary in today's playoffs, that being...
Austin Reeves.
same first initial. Anthony Edwards, Ant-Man. I mean, those first two games, I mean, really opened the eyes. I guess his first introduction to, I guess, what you would call casual fans, NBA fans, whether you can call that, because last year they were bumped in the first round by the same team, the Denver Nuggets, but in an easy five-game match. This year, a little bit different, and a lot of it has to do with the athleticism and the defensive prowess that Anthony Edwards brings to the game. And so the comparisons right after that first or second game have been, is this guy the heir apparent to Michael Jordan? You know, and LeBron must be thinking, hey, what about me? What about me? Sorry, LeBron. This all has to do with, you know, his high-flying capability and his defensive prowess. I mean, a few people fail to remember that Michael Jordan was all defensive how many years in a row? I mean, the five-time, what was he, five-time MVP?
Yep.
Yeah, five-time MVP and...
Six-time finals MVP, yep. Eight-time first-team All-NBA defense.
Yep. But a lot of people are saying, no way, Ant-Man should be even mentioned in the same sense. And I'm saying, hold your horses. Michael Jordan, at this stage, Ant-Man is only 22 years old. Michael Jordan got into the NBA at 21. At 21, he got hurt. So at 22, compared to Ant-Man right now at 22, it's close. I'm not saying that he's better than Michael Jordan, but I'm saying it's close. And if I don't think, I mean, just to be fair to Michael Jordan, I mean, in my opinion, the best basketball player of all time. I mean, sorry, LeBron. I believe when LeBron retires, and if his retirement extends for another 2 years from now, I'll have questions, you know, because I believe in longevity and how long you can play at a high level. That might override some of, you know, the greatness that Michael Jordan has put onto this court. But as right now, I have Michael Jordan as the greatest player. And Anthony Edwards has a lot of the same attributes, both physically and mentally, that Michael Jordan has. I don't know. I still find it hard to see if someone can be as competitive as Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan, you know, back in the days, man, I still remember when that guy had like that 110 degree fever throwing up on the court and still put up game winners. I mean, incredible clutch shooter back then. But Anthony Edwards, like I said, really hasn't had the opportunity until these playoffs to really show his, you know, his pure talents. And we'll see more of it during the Olympics. And hopefully that's something that will, introduce him to the wider public, you know, outside of the United States, you know, for the talent that he can be. But, you know, for all those naysayers, don't count him out. I mean, I'm not saying that he is the next Michael Jordan, but he's definitely the closest thing that I can remember to, at least at this stage of the game, when at 22, when Michael Jordan was 22, that I can remember.
Well, I think Kobe was. By 22, Kobe had won two NBA championships and was all NBA.
But that was more Shaq.
A couple of times. But he was still all NBA at that at that time. But I don't think that Ant-Man has the competitiveness of Jordan. No one really does.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't see Ant-Man at this point being the next Jordan, but he is the next face of the NBA. I give you that, because he has so much charisma and such an exciting brand of basketball. His hops, his speed, his confidence, his leadership at 22 years old, his trash talking, which is what made Michael Jordan and Larry Bird, you know, so famous, because that's a sign of confidence and not backing down from anybody. End of game two, he's going right at Jamal Murray. Keep talking. I'll be there on Tuesday. I love his attitude. And you're right, this is his first time to showcase. I do think he might be handicapped being in Minnesota. So I think he's probably going to have to leave Minnesota, go to LA with the Lakers. And then he can really raise up to billionaire status.
So push Austin Reeves to the bench then.
No, I mean, they can work real well together. It'll be AR and Ant. No, but he's fantastic. And I really think, you know, because Ernie and I talked about this before, we don't think a foreign player can be the face of the NBA. I don't care how good Victor Wembanyama is, Luka, Joker. It's just really, really difficult to have somebody who doesn't even live in the country full time to be the face of the NBA. And I think the Ant-Man is the closest thing that we have. And again, Michael Jordan had that face, the smile, the personality. It's what makes Shohei so popular. Even if he doesn't have that same kind of charisma, he has a magnetic appeal. And I think Ant-Man does have that. And you hit it on the head. If Ant-Man goes to the Olympics and rises up on a team that has Durant, LeBron, Curry, Embiid, and so AD, and so many other stars. If he rises up like he did on the World Championship team and becomes a leader on that team, then it's the Ant-Man's world heading into 2024-2025.
I agree. I mean, that guy has nowhere to go but up. I mean, it's scary to think that the guy is only 22, you know, and... You know, I had doubts on him when...
I had big doubts because he was coming in. It was like he was lazy and he didn't have a very good first year. Yeah. He had an okay first year, but man, he's put that to rest.
Oh, yeah. I mean, being the number one pick out of Georgia, right?
Georgia.
Yeah, out of Georgia. And I was thinking, oh, man, this is... I don't know about this.
Yeah, me too.
You know, so...
It was he and LaMelo, and I was like, it's almost all about LaMelo at the time, and... Yeah, man, he's proven us wrong.
Yeah, Melo won Rookie of the Year that year.
Yeah, it's crazy. I agree. I mean, I think Ant-Man is the best, the closest to Michael Jordan.
The closest being the closest. I only say that because on both sides of the ball.
Yeah.
If you're only watching offense
and style.
Yeah, and if you go back and you watch that the first two games of that of the Denver Timberwolves series. There was a lot of defensive moves that that guy made that made you say, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
He'll play you on ball. He'll play you help. He'll block shots. He's fantastic. I mean, again, it's going to be exciting when he gets to L.A.
I doubt it.
Ant-Man and Tatum.
You can... I won't say it. I won't say it.
All right. It was all about the NBA. We talked a lot about the... playoffs. The Celtics are up 3-1. Everyone else now with OKC's 100-96 victory at Dallas is at 2-2. So there's going to be a lot more playoff basketball. This is good news again for the Boston Celtics because the more Luka has to play injured, the more he's going to be worn down if they come out. So again, this is like completely set up for the Celtics this year, which is why Ernie was referring to this a couple of weeks ago. If they don't win this year, it's going to be devastating.
I'll need therapy. I'll need a lot of therapy.
We talked a little bit about the awards, a little bit about the draft lottery. We talked a little bit about Austin Rivers' comments, and then Ernie shared his thoughts on Ant-Man being the closest at this age, at this stage of his career, to one Michael Jordan. Again, we want your feedback at Sports Rivals Podcast on IG and Facebook, Sports Rivals Pod on Twitter. Tune in weekday mornings to Kool-Aid and Paul Breck on Wake Up in the Den, 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Hawaii time on 760 a.m., 95.1 FM, or on HawaiiSportsRadio.com. That's HISportsRadio.com, where you can listen to the Sports Rivals Podcast as well. Ernie, anything else?
I'm good.
All right. We will not record next week as I travel to Seattle for my daughter's law school graduation. We'll be back in 2 weeks. By then, we should be closer to the NBA Finals showdown between the Boston Celtics and somebody out of the West. And until then, the Sports Rivals are out.
Thank you for joining us on the Sports Rivals Podcast. Check us out on social media at Sports Rivals Podcasts on Instagram and at Sports Rivals Pod on Twitter, where you can share topics you'd like to hear.